your folks get here? I mean, what was the reason for Sam Kurtz moving to the community?
Why he left Ohio, I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
But he came down to Newport News. He came down and he worked over at Oyster Point at a store over there.
Okay.
For several years. Then he went back and to Ohio, and how long he was up there, I don't know if he was just up there. Anyway, since the second time he went up there, he married his wife.
Rebecca.
And they moved back down to Oyster Point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if they was courting before and he just went up there and got married and came back down. I really don't know that. And then he worked over there for a little while. And then he wanted to get into farming. And so that's when they moved over here to get into where he was going to try his hand at farming.
Did they originally buy this first farm where the home place is? Or do you know where they lived when they moved over?
No, I don't know exactly where they lived.
Good morning.
And I don't have when they bought this place.
Mm-hmm.
I do have record when they bought the place back the road.
Who owned that when he bought it?
I think it was Clendenning.
Makes sense, because they owned the property on Carter Road. How are you this
morning? Well, you know that road wasn't called Carter Road back then.
What was it called?
Blue Ridge.
That's right. Okay. Do you know all this history too?
Pardon me?
Do you know all this history too? Where are you from originally?
Ohio.
What part?
Wayne County, Worcester.
Okay. Just north of Holmes County.
I taught in Holmes County.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. A little before I was down here.
These Kurtz men just love Ohio women.
Yeah, actually, Christy had one brother.
Yeah.
And he and his family went to my church in Ohio. So I don't know where the Kurtzes were really from.
Ohio, Pennsylvania, then Ohio. Bern, Switzerland before then.
Yeah, my great-grandfather moved out to Ohio, bought some land. I've got the deed. He bought some land there in Greene County. Mm-hmm. Not Greene County, Greene Township is outside of Oroville. And when he raised his family there, got part of his wife's father split the farm up between three people. He got the biggest part of the third, mm-hmm. Of the land. And when he sold it, I guess it was, I don't know if it was before he died or after he died up there. But he went to her grandpa bought the land.
Really? You start dealing with Mennonites, and the connections between all of them is just incredible.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's one in here I don't understand where this one's got the Matthews. I thought the Matthews only owned land up that way, but I don't know. So this might be this farm here. I don't know for sure. It's A.D. Wanger and A.A. Landis and...
That makes sense, because A.D. Wanger and A.A. Landis owned the land the church was on.
Okay.
Because A.A. Landis was only here till about 1911 or so, but he was a builder and a land speculator all his life, even after they moved from here to Amelia and then back to Pennsylvania. So that makes sense that he and A.D. Wanger owned it, because A.D. Wanger had a bunch of money. And this was in 1920. That makes sense.
And that was about the time that they moved over this way.
Okay. Was the house already there, or did they build the house?
To my knowledge, the house was there.
Okay. There are quite a few, and it may be that Landis built that house, because he built quite a few houses around here. He was a contractor. In fact, he had a farm, but he rented it out. He didn't do any farming. Remember Deal's store?
Oh, yeah.
He built that and the house next to it. So, interesting. So, if they moved here in about 1920 then, if that was the time, and then it was Sam Kurtz, and he had your dad, and what was his brother's name?
Irvin.
Irvin.
There was actually four kids in the family, but only two lived.
Hmm, okay. How did your dad meet your mother? I mean, she's in Ohio and he's down here.
She came to this area.
Oh, she did?
Well, on visits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, A.D. Wanger, you probably knew this, A.D. Wanger, he brought a lot of college kids in here to work his orchards and stuff during the summertime. She did not come down that way.
Uh-huh.
But, and don't ask me how she got lined up, but she was... She actually took care of Governor Darden's kids in mm-hmm. Richmond. She was their, what do you call it?
Governess or nanny.
Yeah. So, but she had moved, when she left home, she moved to Pennsylvania, Allentown, or Reading, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And then her and her sister moved down to Harrisonburg, Virginia, and she married a guy up there. But how she actually got in the community, I don't know for the first time. But that's how they met. One story she used to tell me was, back then when these girls came around, the guys liked to take them out for oyster roast, because most of them didn't know what an oyster was. She made a comment that if you took a bite of it and held it behind your back, then you could eat the rest of it. But she learned to like oysters.
So she didn't get here through Virginia at all then?
Huh?
She didn't get here through Virginia.
I really don't know how they came down here. I really don't. She was with some friends, girlfriends,
mm-hmm.
that came down here to visit. Who they were, I mm-hmm. don't know.
Well, wasn't she related to Dan Smucker somehow?
Yes.
And the Smuckers lived here. So.
And that could be a very good reason why she got down here.
Because I came across a picture in my mother's trove of photographs of your mother and Dan Smucker and somebody else.
They were first cousins.
Okay. And I sent it, my first thought was, well, maybe they used to be courting or whatever. So I sent it to Jeannie Smucker to ask her, do you know anything about this? She said, yeah, they're cousins. I said, oh, okay. Yeah. And she said they were cousins and they were good friends. So.
Yeah, that could be very easily be a possibility.
Sam Kurtz go into dairy farming right away? Was that about the time the dairies were coming along? Or did he just crop farm before he got into cows?
No, I think he got into the cows right away, but he was a little different than the rest of them here. He had a route, but he only sold cream. He used the skim milk to feed to the pigs, and then he had a route in Norfolk that he would take cream around, and eggs, and sausage, and stuff like that. But but his bottling plant, what he bottled was cream only.
Did he do it on his farm there?
Yeah, did it right in that building there, right beside the house there, the, what we call the old wash house.
Really?
That was the old milk house, and that is where everything was done.
I think most of the farmers had sold milk either at the market or, like them, had a route that they followed until the government came along and said, well, it's got to be pasteurized. Oops.
I don't remember us doing that. I used to milk cows by hand when I was...
Really?
I hauled manure and shocked wheat and shocked oats. And
how many brothers and sisters did you have?
Five brothers.
Oh, my goodness.
And one sister.
That's the top to one of his. If I'd have walked a little bit further, I could have got a top without in the side of the picture. And I played with those things when I was a kid, and I wish I wouldn't have played and threw them away. Of course, I know Ernest Miller came up here and took a slew of them because he run out of lids for his milk bottles, and he took a slew of them, as well most of them got to. And but that was his thing.
When did they stop the route? Was that when pasteurization came in? And
nope. It probably got stopped in, I was born in 43. He got out in 40. Probably got stopped in the early 40s.
So he did it for quite a while then.
Yeah. Yeah, he died in 46. There was a little bit of family thing going on. And so, I'll tell you the whole story and you'll know it.
Okay.
Uncle Irvin was on the farm. My dad was working for T.J. Wanger, delivering milk, because, I don't know, from what I had heard from Grandma, that, and Dad would never talk about it much.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, don't ask me no questions, I'm not going to talk. I found out a lot of my stuff from other places. He wanted to come back on the farm because he didn't want to be drafted. And if you worked your own farm, if you was on the home farm, you wouldn't get drafted.
Right.
He wanted to come back. Well, I guess it was a fight between him and Uncle Irvin that farm wasn't big enough or something. Anyway, so he got drafted. He served his time in up here at Luray.
Okay.
The whole 2-3 years he was only at one place. And when we came back to the farm, I mean, when he came back, he got out in 45. I think he got out in 45. And Mom and I lived in Harrisonburg while he was at Luray.
Okay. What year were you born?
43.
Okay.
And Sam, Grandpa died in 46. So I really don't have much. I mean, since I wasn't around, and I was young too, but we found out later whether it was against his Grandpa's will or not, but Uncle Irvin went in and signed up with Burchard Dairy to sell the milk there. And he did a few other things that, but then by the time Dad came back from service, he was ready to go to, he was ready to leave to go to Ohio. So he moved back to Ohio.
How come you wanted to go to Ohio?
Well, the stories that I heard, just so happened Ray Hobbs was working for Uncle Irvin, and when he left, and then he went to work for Dad, when Dad took the farm over, he mentioned that one time, so I asked him, why did Uncle Irvin leave?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him about it, if it was anything on the milk or, you know. He said, no, he didn't think there was. But the only thing that Uncle Irvin could talk about was how much more money the farmers would make in Ohio than they make down here. Selling crops, yes. Because the market was always figured on the price at Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It caused us more to ship the stuff to Chicago. Yeah. It was true. He never realized that Virginia Milk Commission, we got $4 a hundred more than the federal. So when he found that out, he had to come back and try to get some more money. But, yeah, and I've heard from the other side of the family that they felt like they was pushed off the farm. To my knowledge, they wasn't.
Families and inheritances and money can be fraught with all kinds of problems. Every family, the people that I've talked to, T.J. Wanger's farm. Even to my generation, there are ill feelings toward T.J. Wanger because of the way he treated Roy and Powell.
They can do it. They can do it.
Indeed. Well, now, your grandpa bought farms other than what he wound up with, right?
Yeah, so, I was told, and I cannot prove it, but I'm pretty sure it's right, the farm across the road where Stutzman bought,
yeah.
That was bought off of grandpa, from what I understand.
Well, the story, and I was going to ask you about this, the story Harold Buckwalter tells is that your dad owned that farm and sold it to Grandpa Buckwalter, and that Chester Hobbs and Naomi, who was Buckwalter's daughter, lived on the farm and made payments on it. But the deal was that once it was paid for, it would be their farm. But apparently Sam Kurtz didn't trust Chester by himself, so he had Grandpa Buckwalter actually on the deed, or involved in the deal somehow. And Chester was working at the Ford plant, making good money, so there was no problem. Until the Depression came along and he lost his job. Well, now he couldn't make payments.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if it happened the way Harold made it happen, it really raised your grandpa's standing in my esteem anyway, because if he could make the payments, your grandpa could have just foreclosed or took the property back or whatever. That was it, you know. But instead what he did, because he had been making payments, he thought he had some equity in it. He took the farm back, and for the equity, he gave Grandpa Buckwalter 3 or 4 acres that adjoined his property on that side of the farm. And Grandpa Buckwalter gave Chester and Naomi that little piece of land where Sissy is now, because it was just a broom, a little shack where he made brooms. And they moved in there and fixed it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then several years later, the Stutzmans came to town, and your dad then sold the farm to the Stutzmans for less than he had sold it to, because the Depression was on. The land values weren't there. But I haven't been to the courthouse yet to look up the deeds and so forth to see what the transfers were.
Well, when you do that, if you could make extra copies.
Oh, I will.
I appreciate it.
I will.
Now, what you said, so is that the farm that the Stutzman's bought?
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be over here, it'd be down across the road.
Right, across the road.
Yeah.
But when your grandpa took it back, to pay them back the equity, he gave Grandpa Buckwalter, I think it was 3 or 4 acres, on the back of his property from the back side of the farm.
On this?
Right.
So be over on Wanger Road?
Be over on Wanger Road, yeah.
Where Richard lives?
Yep, because that was the Buckwalter home place.
So the farm could have went all the way over there at one time.
There was a little bit of frontage there. Most of it John Buckwalter had. John Buckwalter and Abram Wanger had. But your dad had a little bit of frontage, apparently, 150, 200 feet, whatever it was. It's between where Abe Buckwalter's house was and where Harold Buckwalter's house was your dad's property. And he gave it to him in compensation for what he felt was equity in this property over here, which was pretty big of him.
Yeah. Well, you know, I knew, like I said, if everything Dad went through, he just wouldn't talk much about it. But he did tell me that Grandpa owned that property across the street.
Yeah.
And he did tell me that. And I don't know if I got anything in here kind of containing to that a little bit or not, but all this stuff is old. And I'm sure glad, yeah. And Roach, we eventually bought the Roach farm, or Dad actually eventually bought the Roach farm.
Which is the Roach farm? Where is that?
Well, that is back behind the Tunnifoss farm, old Tunnifoss farm, the old Sloss farm. And I'm almost positive that the Sloss place used to be in the Roach place, but I can't prove that. Because some of these deeds we talk about, like the deed that on the place back there at the corner of Maxwell and Bedford, the deeds keep talking about the Roach, in the Clendenning farm or the Sloss place never comes up in the records that I have. I probably don't have all the records, but it keeps talking about the farm that we bought back there borders the Roach place on the south side. So either the Sloss place came off of that or something. I'm not exactly sure what happened there. But Dad bought the rest of the Roach place probably back in the, I was a kid, probably in the late 50s.
And did that include all down Bedford Street up to the Tenafoss place, behind the Tenafoss place?
Yes, it was behind the Tenafoss place. It butted up against Abram Wanger's farm in the back.
Okay.
On the south, on the west side, it butted up against Abram Wanger's farm, and on the north side, or the south side, it butted up against Creepmore Farm. And then went all the way down to Carter Road.
It's hard to get a grip on some of these things. I mean, I've kind of waited to the end, so it'll be another few months before I get to the courthouse, where I want to look up all these old, because you can search the deed by name and say, okay, who transferred to where, who and where was it, and see if I can at least get a better feel for some of this stuff. I mean, like one of the things was the Carter Farm. Do you have any idea where the Carter Farms were?
No.
Okay. And that was Carter Road was named after, but they lost them all. You know, back in before the 1920s, they lost them all.
Well, this area in this, from my understanding, this was originally the herring plantation.
Carol Herring and Calvin Herring.
Yeah, and some of their graves are right down there at the corner.
Are they really?
Yep.
Okay, because others are, there's a private graveyard near Centerville Baptist, and some of them are out there.
Yeah, Carol's been here at least once, if not two, three times. He came in here, she seen that we were keeping it mowed, so then he decided he didn't need to come back no more.
How many graves are out there?
I think there's more than what's marked. There's about three or four marked, but to my recollection, there's more graves in there than that.
Yeah, we've got a graveyard in our backyard, but there were no markers there anymore. There was a couple of pieces of concrete that you couldn't read anything, and they'd been broken up. A.C. Swain, the story I heard was that the graveyard was bigger, but every year it got smaller when A.C. would just plow another row into it.
Well, that's basically what happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, and down here it was, well, we actually took a little bit of it. We moved the tombstone a little bit. Probably instead of being at the head, it might have been at the feet, but mm-hmm. to get into some of our buildings.
Yeah.
But outside of that, we haven't done anything.
Yeah.
But there was a graveyard right across from Philip's house over there.
Oh, really?
And that finally disappeared altogether.
And no telling who's there.
But
well, it's, and sometimes there's nobody. Dave and Marvin Zook's father has got a gravestone over here in our cemetery, but he's buried in Floyd, Virginia. But his first wife was already here, so they just got the stone and put his name on it as a memorial, but he's got another stone with his second wife up in Floyd. Because I could not find, you know, his name was on the thing, but I couldn't find out where he was, even though the, there was a marker there. And I found out yesterday why.
Well, one thing I found out about my grandpa in Ohio, they would bury, his wife died first, and she was buried out there at Oak Grove.
Right by Oak Grove Mennonite Church, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I walked out there and looked at the tombstone one time, and her name was out there. I could never find a tombstone for my grandpa. So I went down, we went down to the, what's that place called in Ohio that's got
the... Oh, in Berlin there?
No, it's not, it's outside of Berlin.
That's not the one you mean?
Yeah, in Bunker Hill.
Well, they have the...
You know about the Amish Mennonite historical thing?
Yeah, the Merle thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I went in there one time, and they have ancestries in the back. And the lady, and the man, it happened to be an Amish man in the back mm-hmm. when I was in there. And he said, oh, yeah, he's buried out there at Oak Grove, too. So he pulled up a picture of the tombstone. And they went in and done something to the front of the tombstone. Mm-hmm. And then they took pictures of it. So under down at the bottom, he says that he is actually buried here too, but they buried one on top of the other. So.
You have to say that farmer.
He spent some time. He spent some time in Worcester up there, going through Worcester to the county seat for Wayne County.
Mm-hmm.
Going through, he's. We were there quite a long time, the one day especially.
Well, there was two stories out there. And mm-hmm. One that he lived at one place, and for some reason I didn't quite agree with that.
This was Sam's father?
Yeah. And I mean, I got into, mm-hmm. I don't do it much anymore, but I brought the came up when we came across and everything. And so anyway, I went down to the county office down there and pulled up the deeds, and I showed the deeds to some people didn't quite agree with me, and you just sat there and looked at it. They're trying to tell me it was at a different farm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I know where the mix-up is, because the guy that owned the farm before or not before, but later on, mm-hmm. when they came in knowing, they said the Kurtzes lived on the Zimmerleaf, Glenn Zimmerleaf's farm. Well, see, his farm is up there,
mm-hmm.
but the farm was originally, was not in the Zimmerleaf family until my grandpa sold it to her grandpa. And not many people know that up there.
Gotcha.
So when they talk about this other Zimmerleaf up there, they all think, well, that's the place.
Yeah.
So.
But it's not. One of the first people around here was, this is a young man's game because I can't remember unless I've got it written down in front of me sometimes. The first bishop that was here and preacher, Wirt, J.D. Wirt. Do you know anything about him?
No, I do not.
Okay. You wouldn't have remembered for sure because they left here in 1911.
Yeah, Brunk was over here. I don't know of anything.
Yeah, and he died in 1935. So, but some of his effect stayed because he was married to A.D. Winger's sister. And so between A.D. Winger and Timothy Winger was a brother, and Abram Winger, a nephew, they really had the community under control because they were the deacons and the preachers and the bishop. And they were all very conservative, you know, much more conservative than some of the other areas. Mm-hmm. Like, and then they were succeeded by, or brought by Eli Kramer, who was still Amish, really. He just put Mennonite on his name, and he was a nut. So.
Yeah, I remember him, Art.
Do you really? What do you remember about him?
Well, it was a couple of things. He was pretty strict. Your dad and him had some conversations.
Mm-hmm. Over a necktie.
Right.
I was old enough to remember that.
I guess the main thing that really stands out in my mind is that we had revival meetings over here one time, and he stood up and confessed that he was wrong and asked the church for forgiveness.
He did?
He did. Right over here in Mount Pleasant Church.
And that was Eli?
Yep, the bishop. His main thing was that he felt like God did not want him to be bishop, but he wanted to be bishop.
Hmm. So they didn't draw him by the lot?
It could have been. I don't know. Probably most likely they did everything by the lot back there.
Well, not really. They did a lot, but like Clayton Berge was not by the lot. It was by acclamation. Everybody kind of agreed, okay, he's the best person we have to be a preacher.
Yeah. But yeah, that stands out in my mind.
Of him making confessions. Do you remember?
And he took me to Ohio one time to see my cousins up there.
Oh, really?
There. And we were down going down 460, and the train was going down beside 460 up there. He wanted to see how fast the train was going. I mean, that's the fastest I've ever traveled in my life. So, yeah, a few things. He was on the conservative side, and the split at the over Deep Creek was mainly because he took his people and left.
Yeah. And between that and the Nike base, that put Deep Creek pretty much eventually out of business.
Yeah.
I spent the day with, or a good part of the day yesterday with Marvin Zook. And his memory of where people lived and what happened is incredible for as old as he is. That was interesting.
All the masks over there. And that's the reason they had left and moved to Amelia, because the government came in there and took some of their land.
Mm-hmm.
and put those Nike sites on there.
Yeah, I came across...
And see, they're my cousins, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're almost his first cousins.
Okay, have you read the book that they put together, The Mass Family?
Probably not.
I came across it. It's from 2002 or 3, I think. And basically, it's recollections and family stories. But interesting, and I came across it in Mama's stuff, because the rest of the family could care less, so I got all of her pictures and all of her literature, and going through it and copying in. And I got a hold of one of the masks to ask, could I copy it and put it on the website? Because there are a lot of references, even though it's mainly about Deep Creek and Amelia, there's still a lot of references to Fentress and to Warwick County, Warwick River. Because they were there, and they were, mm-hmm. had connections with people there. And the Smokers and the Masts. Well, Virginia was related to them, too.
Yeah.
Or Norman was, rather. Well, Virginia, too, because she was a Smoker.
Yeah. I don't know if they were related on the Mast side or not. But
they were.
They were, okay.
Yeah, because they mentioned Norman.
Okay.
And I haven't made all the ties yet, but so far, of all the members of the Minute, because... what I'm putting together is really trying to do a little biography on every newcomer to the church, and I've been doing research for the last year and a half, and so far I have not been able to find a single member of Mount Pleasant who came from somewhere else in the Mennonite community, not somebody who was converted but came from somewhere else, who is not related somehow to everybody else. I mean, without exception, the one that was the furthest was Junior Miller's family. But we share, they're related to the Host Settlers from the original Host Settler, the Host Settler Massacre. One of the sisters is one of Junie's family's ancestors. So, I mean, you might have to go back a bunch of generations, but somehow there is a relationship there.
But the house that you had on the pictures, the Francis Miller house,
mm-hmm.
who, as far as I remember, Francis Miller, that was Junior's dad that lived up in that house.
Yeah.
Was there any other Francis?
No. He bought that, and I forget the name now because I haven't done all the research on that. They moved from Kempsville over here and rented the house for a while and then bought it from the widow lady that owned it. But there were no Millers there. In fact, there were Millers here before
came. Yeah, I was thinking you showed that house and had... Did you put Francis E. Miller on that?
Francis B. Miller.
Francis B.
Right. And John Miller, who's there now.
Yeah. Okay. Probably read that wrong.
Well, I could have had a typo. I go back and look sometimes at old shucks. I got to fix that.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't looked at everything, but I've looked at some of the stuff that you put on.
No, if you looked at everything, your eyes would water. It's just not, it's not really intended to be interesting. It's intended to be a resource for somebody who comes in the next generation and gets curious. They don't have to do some of this work all over again.
Yeah.
You need lots and lots of pictures and... Well, if you looked at pictures one time, we sat down up at the pictures.
Well, one thing that was one of the first people that moved in here, I don't know if it was Leslie Swartz or someone that came in after that, put something out on, I don't know if it was the budget or where, but they advertised this place as a good farming country.
A couple of them did. E.R. Miller did, and J.D. Wirt did.
Okay.
And when he got here, A.D. Wanger did. So there were several of them. There was in the budget, and then in the Word, there were three Mennonite newspapers at that time. Word of Truth, I think, was one of them. They really played it up. This is a great place to be. And they didn't get a lot of movement here until 1908 to 1910. And that was primarily because there was a panic in 1907. Farm prices went pot. And there was a big impetus to, we got to go somewhere we can make a living. And it's, you know, one of the things that's been interesting is to trace the relationships. Okay, so-and-so moved here. Why? Who did he know? He knew somebody. And eventually you find out, yeah, okay, he knew, like, A.A. Landis and the Buckwalders lived in the same town and were friends. Mm-hmm. He was also friends with J.D. Wirt. I can't find out if he was friends with J.D. Wirt before he moved here or after they moved back. But after they moved back to Pennsylvania, there were several instances in the newspaper and in the budget about so-and-so. They visited each other. So they were connections and ties there. And he left about the same time J.D. Wirt did, along with several other people. And so you can see, okay, there was a faction there. You know, and so when they, it wasn't really a church split, it was, okay, if he's leaving, I'm leaving, type thing. So, but it's been fascinating. And every now and then you come across stories or things that people write, or you see something in the newspaper, like Maggie Buckwalter. In the newspaper there, when she was 16 years old, came home from work one day, was working at a factory or something in Pennsylvania. And there was nobody else home, and she went inside and she found somebody in the house. And he hit her upside the head and knocked her out. And she came to, she was in her bed, and that's all it says about her, whether she was raped or not, who knows. But they thought they knew who the guy was, but then I never could find any more about the story. You know, nobody in our generation anyway had never heard that story. So those are interesting to run across too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you remember, Nina says she remembers there was somebody drawn by the lot in the church down here. Do you remember it? And it was a very sober occasion, and I can't think who it would be. Unless it was a deacon, because the preachers were...
What did she mean by sober?
It's very serious. And everything I read about the drawing of the lot, it is serious business, because, you know, if you're chosen by the lot, then in the Mennonite tradition, you have no choice. You may not want to be a deacon, but if the lot falls on you, you're a deacon. You know? And there's a story, well, that mast you talked about was a preacher, and there was a story in his book, I just read it this morning, that when the lot fell on him, his wife just started bawling, because she just... This is terrible. She's going to be a preacher's wife.
And yeah, all that must have been Harvey.
Huh?
Must have been Harvey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, because they didn't get paid and they had to do all the work.
Yep. Well, he had a big enough family, he didn't have to work.
There were a few of them. That was for sure.
No, I can't.
Do you remember when they still had a council meeting here?
Oh, yeah.
I think they stopped it, I think, shortly after I joined the church, because I don't remember going to one. Do you remember John Buckwalter at all?
No.
How about T.J. Wanger?
No.
What is the... Do you think the church over here is going in the right direction or the wrong direction, or what could they do to improve, or?
No, I basically feel they're going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Joining the conservative conference, so is that a step backwards, a step forwards, or?
Well, when they started joining, Dale suggested that I read the history of somebody wrote a history of the Conservative Conference, and I did. And it's kind of eye-opening. The Conservative Conference is not really conservative any, much anymore.
Yeah, no, it's not.
It's changed, and it seems, and I've seen that in all the histories I've written, that when a church begins doing mission work, begins reaching out, it becomes more liberal almost automatically. And it comes from the people who have to deal every day with ordinary people who are not Mennonite or don't have a Mennonite background. And that seems to what has happened in the conservative conference.
Mm-hmm.
That they became much more evangelical or much more concerned about missions and reaching out than the insular, you know, the Amish don't reach out. They just assume you didn't come. It's not part of their ethos.
Yeah, I spent 12 years on a Virginia mission board, and I got a new...
How so?
Yeah. And it's... Yeah, I mean, you can hold your ground, but at the same time, you got to make... You just can't hold on to everything that how everything was done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make you have to move along. I know my grand, I had an aunt that was a missionary in Africa, and her main thing was over there was, you know, church used to be no divorce and no remarriage, and that was a no-no. And she said, over there, people come to know the Lord, they might be in their second, third, fourth marriage. How are you going to tell them to do to go back to the first? They got to leave their husband or wife to who they're with right now? No, I mean, it's... You need to move on from this spot and not go back.
Mm-hmm.
No, I feel like, you know, I'm very much against homosexuality, and so from that standpoint, I think the church made a... I wasn't really not really happy about leaving Church USA, because I kind of like to be in a thorn in the side.
If somebody had to keep their feet to the fire, it might as well be you, huh?
When Ruth and I both had experiences. We went to Church USA's convention one time. And,
yeah, we were delegates several years.
That's right.
And a guy come to the table and sat down, and he had us, the leader had us going around the table, and when the guy talked beside me, he talked about homosexuals and how they are, I don't even remember all the comments he made, but I was the next one to talk, and I turned around, after I introduced myself, I said, not the Bible that I read, I don't read the same thing you read in your Bible, and I really came down hard on him.
Mm-hmm.
And after they dismissed, the leader of the table come up, do you know who you was talking to? I said, no. He said, well, he's one of the main leaders in the homosexual group. I said, so be it. I told him how I felt about it.
With authority to back it up.
And I'll have to say that through the rest, that happened on the first day, and we sat side by side the rest of the conference.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so,
one of the things that I appreciated about being in the Methodist Church for 30 years, it doesn't seem like it, was that there just seemed to be this ethos, even if it wasn't stated, said, as long as we believe and agree that salvation is through Jesus Christ, and I've accepted that, we can disagree about everything else, and it won't matter. We'll still be friends. So, just didn't have some of the, of course, at that time they weren't dealing with the homosexual question the way they are now, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
What happened with Sam here, from your perspective? Sam, Preacher Sam.
Say it, Skaggs.
Skaggs, there you go.
He was a good preacher, and he could really come across from the pulpit really good. He was not a pastor.
For instance, how do you mean?
He's a preacher, but not a pastor.
He would, if you did not agree with everything, and there was quite a few instances that came up that if you disagreed with him, he kind of shunned you and would have nothing to do with you anymore. Hmm. We had one lady that he was at odds with.
Who was that?
It so happened to be, he had a few. But this one was...
Not Marilyn.
Yeah, Marilyn. And she came back and wanted to apologize and make things right. And he said, no, I'm not going to talk to you. I have no business talking to you. That did not set too well. Mm-hmm. We had another guy right in the meeting, and it happened to me.
When you're on this, you were in the board.
But, you know, I'm still seeing him walking down through the fellowship hall holding his phone up in the air. I answered this phone every time it rings. Well, I know it's not right because he didn't answer my phone calls. Mm-hmm. But he criticized the other guy because he criticized him that he would not try to call him and he wouldn't answer his phone. Well, that's true because it happened to me. I know it's true. Mm-hmm. But no, I answer my phone. And other times, being on the mission board and stuff, other times I had to go to Sam and talk to him a little bit, and Sam would not pick up his phone and call me. He always had Sharon call me. Mm. And he wants to meet with you. When will it suit you? Well, then I'll have to see if it suits him. And it was just back and forth, been a whole lot easier.
And he just...
Yeah, Sam came from a church where the preachers were pretty well in control.
Oh, up there, Virginia.
But when one thing I would do admire Sam for is when his daughters, or one of them at least, didn't do right, he was told up there that he had to do such and such with his daughter.
What church was this?
Cornerstone and Ridge and it's up at
In the valley?
In Broadway.
Oh, okay. The main, I'm not familiar with anything he did up there.
The main thing, he was under Showalter. Showalter told him he had to put his kids out of the church or something because of something they did, and he wouldn't do it. He up and left. So I'm more saying for that. But then it looks like he learned his lesson. When he came down here, is every church he's been to, he's not lasted.
Yeah.
It's just because he's a good preacher and all that, but he just didn't have the skills to be a pastor.
That wasn't his gift.
Yeah.
Why do you think there was such a reaction and the church lost so many attendees when his contract wasn't renewed? I mean, we went from talking about expanding the church to glad we didn't.
There was a lot of people that left while he was here. Mm-hmm. More people left while he was here.
Oh, really?
Yes. Than left when he left. The people that left were pretty well Judy, leader back here, she left because she felt like he was converted doing Phil's time here, and she felt like you were running somebody off from Mount Pleasant that was converted under my dad. That was her talk.
Mm.
Philip and Martha was very good friends with Sam. Actually, their daughter Maria stayed at Sam's family, stayed in Sam's house when she went to EMSH, the high school up there. So they had good ties there. What was the girl that used to lead singing? With the guitar and stuff.
Ruth
Casper.
Yeah. She had odds at Mount Pleasant before that too. Yeah, and she was good friends with Sam.
But wasn't one of her disagreements with Mount Pleasant that they just weren't charismatic enough? I mean, she was more of a...
Yeah.
And probably wouldn't have been here with... If Sam... My impression was that if Sam hadn't been here, she wouldn't have been here anyway.
But most likely, yes. And, well, when, you know, Linda and Paul left for their kinfolks, and they felt like Sam got treated wrong. And why people like Paul Overhaul, not Paul, but Paul Zook, left, I don't know. I think they was pretty good friends of Sam, because Sam would go use their swimming pool to baptize people. So I think it was but there were more people left before while Sam was here than left.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons, I think one of the reasons this stuff kind of came to a head. Well, I guess one of the reasons, I'll take the blame for it, one of the reasons our overseer at that time was Randy Koblenz, and I was very good friends with Randy. And
he was in a tough position.
And I was not on church council at this time when this was happening. And I knew he was very good friends with Sam too. And when Nina told me that, well, I guess I was on a church council at that time. That he had put out a letter that they were pretty well pushing Nevin back, and this other guy that was an ex-preacher from Huntington, I can't think of his name. That's just old people stuff. They can't keep people's names.
I know exactly what you mean, Kenny.
He wanted him in there with him instead of Nevin.
Mm.
So, and he put out a letter that with the leadership council and the administration council both approved this move. When Nina confronted him, because it was never brought up before the administration committee. And there were some words exchanged, pretty harsh. And I called Randy up and told him, I says, you know, you don't know what's going on over here. And I told him what I knew. And it was a fact, because I was on the church councils, and I know I was on the, you know, administrative part of it, and so I knew it was not brought up, too. And then it's when stars started hitting. He was, and Randy was given bad advice by the conference minister.
How so? What was he advised? That,
huh?
What kind of bad advice?
The way he went about. The way they went about. People talking about Sam. They had meetings, and he encouraged people to come and discuss it. And
each people, one person at a time, got in the front and talked.
And it, that should never happen.
You're talking about this mass meeting they had over here? That was a disaster.
That should have never have happened.
No. You're absolutely right. I agree.
And that's the advice that he got from the conference pastor.
So that wasn't his idea?
No, it wasn't his idea. And that, the church pastor at that time, I never had much for him.
Who was it? I don't.
Cried.
Did he ever preach over here?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure who you're referring to, Kenny.
Yeah, that tall guy. Last time he talked, when we were talking about leaving, he came down and had a meeting. And I run into him a lot at conferences and stuff. Mm. Him and I was, the only time we got on a good page is when he was pushing some MDS stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that. Yeah.
I don't think I ever saw him.
But he came in there and...
Hey man, he was a preacher down here for a while?
No, he was a conference minister.
Oh, okay, no wonder.
Clyde, I want to say Krause.
Kratz. Oh, wow.
But he came, the last time he was down here, he came in here and he talked a little bit about it. And he said, you know, the hurts and everything that went along with Sam being kind of been pushed out. He said, well, my home church, something like that happened 90 years ago and they're still fighting over it. You know, it shouldn't have. And we have had a lot of disagreements at Mount Pleasant, mm-hmm, over the years. A lot of disagreements. Nothing has ever worked out like it did with Sam.
Yeah. Yeah, there's never been a split quite like that.
Yeah.
Or I say it wasn't really a split. It was just kind of over that period of a year or two, just a lot of people just fell away.
And another thing, I went to Sam and one time and asked him to talk to, Sam was over there in Albania. I mean, he's actually converted the first people over there and he has a lot of connections over
there. That's his gift.
Yeah, and Linda Miller had questioned me on some of the work over there that the mission board was doing, and I answered her the best that I could. Then she was wondering about what happened earlier. I said, well, you ought to go talk to Sam, because Sam was over there when it first started.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of hee-hawed around, so I went to Sam one day and I said, why don't you talk to Linda about some of the stuff over there in Albania and how it got started and everything, because you know more details about it than I do. Sam's answer to me was, I can't talk to that lady. And that's where it stopped.
Yeah, there was some bad blood there. It came because she, after Laura, didn't she? She filled in for Laura as church secretary for a little while.
Yeah.
And they came to loggerheads there, and there was some bad blood.
Because I did a lot of good in Albania. I'm not here. You're here in Beauty County, but it makes me think. My first cousin, Glenn Zimmerly, and his wife were in Albania for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew Sam, and I remember Glenn telling me one time, yeah, he didn't really care for Martha because he didn't like that she was doing the teaching the women. Women's class was teaching.
They were over there working, and so Sam would go over there, and Well, see, that was kind of under Cornerstone to begin with,
mm-hmm.
when it first started.
Mm.
It eventually left Cornerstone and came under the Virginia Mennonite Conference, mm-hmm. or Virginia Mennonite Mission Board.
Right.
But it was under the Cornerstone to first start with. And you know, he would go over there. And Martha was, she was a leader. And
this is your cousin, Martha?
Her husband, Glenn Zimmerman, my first cousin.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And he would go over there and have meetings, and he said, men only, no women. I mean, you're working with ladies over there, along with men, and you want to work, talk things over with the people that are missionaries that are over there. And you tell men can only attend, women can't attend?
That doesn't, yeah, because very frequently, especially if you're going to a new field, it's the women who come first.
Yeah.
And bring the men.
So that's, yeah, they kind of, her cousin Glenn kind of had an issue with him because of that.
But it seems throughout, and in this, all Mennonite congregations and Baptist are the same thing, that you can't get three of them together without having two churches. You know, they're going to find a way to split from each other, and sometimes over the most silly things. Just reading the histories of, because anytime I find a history of a conference, I get it and read it just to learn more about it. And the Franconia conference split because they, in the first churches, they had the preacher's bench. It was, he sat and behind the bench. And in front of the bench was like this, and in front of the bench was at 90 degrees was a table, usually with three guys on each side, and they were the song leaders. You know, they led from sitting at that thing. And there was no pulpit. In fact, to have a pulpit was considered raising the preacher above, and the preacher is not above, the preacher's equal with the rest of us. Well, they built a new church in the Franconia Conference, and they put a little pulpit in there. And the conference split over that thing. I mean,